Lisa.
And I'm Pat. We are part of North Coast Food Web, working to build healthy communities in our region through local food and agriculture.
And today on Food Talk, Pat and I are talking to each other
about food,
because we wanted to talk about seasonal cooking, getting ready for the holidays and stuff like that. And we just had a lot of ideas we wanted to banter back and forth with each other. And then we also have some ideas about how we want to include you in future conversations about food. So we're going to take an opportunity to talk about that later. And one of the first things I wanted to say was to thank everybody who came out for the Grow the Coast conference down in Seaside this past Saturday. It was a great conference put on by North Coast Food Web and Food Roots in Tillamook and Oregon State University Extension Service. And it was all about food, farming, and community. And it was great. And so thank you for everybody who came out for that. And if you missed it, one of the cool things that we did was in the morning at the kind of keynote presentation, we had kind of a community conversation. And I want to offer it up to continue that conversation with all of you out there listening, because I'm assuming that if you're listening to Food Talk, that you care about food, you think about food, you like food, you probably eat food, and hopefully you like to eat local food. And so we had two questions that we posed to the audience, and I'm going to pose them to you. And I would love for you to send us an email if you feel inspired to answer these questions. And you can send it to foodweb at info@northcoastfoodweb.org. That's info@northcoastfoodweb.org. I'm not going to spell that out, yeah. And then you could also, if you're down in Tillamook County and you want to connect with Food Roots, you could send it to microbiz@foodrootsnw.org. So it's microbiz at foodrootsnw.org. So here are your questions. And I'm paraphrasing because I'm trying to remember them. I don't have them written down in front of me. But the first question we asked was, what changes have you seen in the last few years that kind of tell you things have changed for the better? What are the improvements that you've seen in our local food system in the last few years? What are you excited about? What's happened that you're feeling positive about? And then question number two is, what opportunities do you see out there for us to make improvements in our food system, for things to get better? What are the opportunities that you see out there that maybe aren't happening yet, but you'd like to see happen in our communities? And this is surrounding food, farming, gardens, hunger, whatever your issues are, whatever you're concerned about, let us know. We really want to hear from you. It was exciting to hear from the community at Grow the Coast, and we'd really like to continue that conversation. So, and if you send an email to either of our organizations, we'd love it if you just maybe put, Grow the Coast in the subject line, and that'll let us know that you're answering those questions. But even if you don't, we'll probably get it if we get emails answering those questions. So thank you so much.
So if people send emails in, mm-hmm. Should they expect a reply back, or is this more about a way to gather information?
I think we'll probably just send a thank you for submitting your questions reply. And then what we're doing, someone from Oregon Food Bank very generously offered to take all of the post-it notes that were generated during this presentation, and they're compiling all the information that was on them. So what we'll do is then combine that with any email responses we get. And we'll probably, issue a report or like send something out to the community, do a press release, do a story in the news, and let people know this is what people told us. And why this is helpful is because for organizations like Food Web, Food Roots, OSU Extension Service, Oregon Food Bank. These are all groups that are interested in community food system work. They're interested in our local food from a lot of different angles, but we're all interested in it. And it's important to know what the communities that we serve are concerned about and what they think, because that's how you truly get that conversation going about food. So we're really excited to hear from people. So
speaking of food, I'm sure there was some great food at Grow the Coast.
There was really great food at Grow the Coast.
Shout out to Marianne.
Yes, Marianne Myers really led the food. And I heard a number of people comment that it was the best food they'd ever had at any conference. So, and as it should be for a conference about local food.
Yeah.
So I'm well primed to talk about food this morning.
Great. So let's talk about food.
Well, I think we were kind of trying to come up with like what to talk about today, and we were going back and forth, but seasonal food really seemed like something that we were thinking about, because the seasons have clearly shifted.
Yeah.
And it's fall, and I find like what I like to eat changes.
Oh yeah.
To this time of year.
And I love doing stews and all kinds of braises, and one of my most favorite things is roasting chicken. I probably roast 2 or 3 chickens a month, maybe even like once
mm-hmm.
a week. Because I love, love, love being able to cook once
mm-hmm.
and eat 2, 3, 4 times. And I save the parts and make stock. So there's yet another
You know, I want you to talk people through that because that's something that I think a lot of people hear about. But then when you're handed a whole chicken, a lot of people are very perplexed by this.
Yep.
And what do you do with it? And how, you hear this like, it can feed you for a week, but what is that? So how do you roast a chicken?
So amazing. So I am a firm believer in buying whole chickens, especially when you can find them on sale and buy the best chicken you can afford. And learn how to cut up a whole chicken. It really, I know it's daunting when you first look at it, but you can Google it to see lessons on how to do it. I'm happy to show people how to do it at the shop. So cutting up a chicken, so you've got then parts for however you want to cook it, or easy, just roast it whole. And I say just, but basically roasting, putting it in a pan, in the oven, whatever temperature you want. There's all
I usually do it at about 350, I would say, is like a good thing to do. And what I've come to do is like I take like half a lemon and cut it and like shove it into the cavity with some fresh herbs, like thyme or rosemary. Sometimes I'll brush a little olive oil on the outside, salt and pepper.
Chickens are so forgiving. They're not real picky about what you do to them.
No, they're not. And in
season it however you want.
I will say that a good thing to have if you are going to start roasting meats or roasting whole chickens is like picking up a meat thermometer is really handy for that whole like when is it done question, because you stick it in and it and the little dial goes up to poultry or lamb or beef. And
or for those of you who don't have the words on there, that's 165 for done poultry.
I got the one for like idiots who need to know. but it's so that's a really, really helpful thing, because those are often the questions that people have with, you know, how do I do this? And you feel really intimidated. It's like, is it done? I don't know. Did I overcook it? Did I undercook it? So a meat thermometer can really make a huge difference in your confidence level.
I will say, too, one of the things that I've started doing in the past couple years, I've never been a big fan of wet brining.
And say what wet brining is.
So making a brine of usually water that's heavily salted. Sometimes it's got herbs or fruit or whatever other ways to flavor it. And putting the piece of poultry, you often hear this at Thanksgiving time, a big turkey, putting it in a big enough vessel so that it's completely submerged in water and letting it brine so that the salt really penetrates deeper layers. So lots of people swear by wet brining. If that works for you, great. I prefer dry brining, and I'll do this with a whole chicken maybe an hour to 2 hours before I'm going to put it in the roaster. I'll do it with parts for maybe only 45 minutes to an hour. But basically salting and pretty heavily, so a couple tablespoons maybe for a bigger bird, to a tablespoon for a small chicken, and really generously salting inside and outside of the piece of poultry and letting it
You
rest.
Just let it sit?
Yeah. If I'm going to let it sit for a while, I'll just loosely cover it with some Saran and pop it in the fridge. A lot of chickens, especially if you're buying chickens at the grocery store, they already have a lot of moisture in there. And they can tend to be a little bit spongy. So for me, if I'm wet brining, that's just adding more
moisture,
kind of unnecessary moisture. But salting them, thank you, Alice Waters.
this is where you learned how to do it.
It is. That's where I read more in detail about the technique. So that dry brining just is an amazing way to help push flavor deeper into the flesh.
Do you just leave the salt on before you roast it?
Yep.
Really? That seems really salty to me.
You know, it's so not. I know a tablespoon sounds like a lot, but if you think about it, I'm doing this as if people can see what I'm doing with
my
hands.
She's making
here.
A little gesture in her
I'm
cupped hand.
I'm measuring a tablespoon of salt in my hand to show Teresa.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, how big are your hands? I mean, that's what, when people do those hand measurement things, it's like, well, okay, yeah, great. You know, I had someone show me like making a baking recipe and they're like, well, you do a handful of this and a handful of that. I'm like,
whose hand?
Whose hand? Is my hand bigger than your hand? So, yeah.
That's a great point, but that's a really wonderful way to learn if you don't want to take the time to measure things out. Learn what a teaspoon of salt looks like when it's in your hand. Learn what a tablespoon of salt looks like when it's in your hand. And if it feels like that's too much, drop it down a little bit, you will be amazed mm-hmm. at how much flavor that brings out. And it really isn't mm-hmm. like salty.
I would say too that so I know some people have issues with salt yeah. and like they're trying to cut salt out of their diets. And so they're probably having a heart attack listening to you talk about this.
Lemon, garlic, and the herbs.
The lemon, garlic, and herbs is a really good alternative. Beautiful. And I've done it too where you you take a really sharp knife to poke into the bird and push a clove of garlic in. To the before you
I
roast
love to
it,
do that with lamb.
Yeah,
and
that's
beef.
A really good thing to do with roast as well.
Beautiful.
And or just sticking a whole head of garlic into the cavity of the chicken with the lemon and the herbs. Yeah. Those are really great ways to add a lot of flavor without adding salt yeah. too. So roasting, we're thinking about roasting. You know what?
And save those bones. Save the, you've got to make stock.
You do, and I will say this: one of the best things when I roast a chicken. It's kind of hard because it's so delicious and you want to eat it all right mm-hmm. away. But one of the things I love to do is make a pot pie, which is just
yum.
The most freaking comfort food ever for this time of year.
Dumplings.
Yeah. So yum. Like making stock out of the chicken parts, which is really just you take the bones, the carcass. It's probably still got bits of roasted chicken on it and you stick it in. I love to do this in a slow cooker or you can just do it in a pot on the stove.
I like a pot on the stove.
And then you put in the carcass and herbs.
Throw in some herbs, a bouquet garni.
A bouquet garni, which is a fancy pants way of saying a bunch of little herbs tied up in a bundle. And so you can easily fish it out again. And put in some
carrots, onion, celery
is great. Some parsley, maybe, if you have it. It's very forgiving stock.
Yep. Do you salt your stock before you cook it?
I don't either. Sometimes I'll put whole peppercorns in.
Yep. I do that.
For flavor. Yep. And you let it go for, how long do you use for?
I cook mine for at least 10 to 12 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Longer is
okay.
better.
I'm
and
too
you
lazy
want
to do that.
Simmering really, really slow, which is the reason I don't use my crock pot. My crock pot's really old.
Uh-huh.
And it cooks at too high of a temperature,
oh, okay.
which sounds really weird for a crock pot. But my chicken stock winds up almost bubbling,
oh, okay.
which makes it a little bit cloudy. So I do on the stove and at a really low simmer
uh-huh.
covered, and I let it go for hours because you really want all of that beautiful collagen in those bones to
come out.
To come out and really permeate. So you want that chicken, that carcass to give up every last little thing it has
uh-huh.
because that's all flavor in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't hang in there for 12 hours.
As long as you can.
Yeah.
As long as you can.
At least two.
Yeah.
That's bare minimum.
And then straining it to get all the bits and pieces out. If you have a fine mesh strainer or you can line a strainer with cheesecloth, that's a great way to get the bits and pieces out. And this is a great way to make stock. And you can freeze stock. And the thing is, you can do this with, you could do it with beef. You could also do it with vegetables. If you're a vegetarian, this is also a great way just the vegetable parts, onions, carrots, leeks are great in a vegetable stock, mushrooms.
Thinking about your trimmings,
mm-hmm.
When I was working with Chef Catherine at the farmer's market in Portland, she would always save, when she pulled the thyme leaves off the stem, she would save the thyme stems.
Mm-hmm.
When she cut the tops off a leek and you only use a part of the leek, the tops would go in this bag.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about sort of
what are the extra bits?
Ends of mushrooms that you're cutting off and put those things in the freezer, have a container and just throw things in there as you're prepping food during the week and mm-hmm. then add that to your stock pot, whether you're making a vegetarian broth or chicken. It's just adds great mm-hmm. flavor and cuts down on waste in the kitchen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
especially
good.
If you don't have a compost pile outside where you'd be adding those things and that would just be going in the trash. It's a really great way to use those things. So homemade stock is wonderful and it really does add a lot of flavor. And so, for me, the whole roasted chicken thing, I try to not eat all of the chicken in round one so that there's enough left over to make a good pot pie.
Yeah.
I also make a vegetable pot pie. It's very similar.
Nice.
And I have, there's the crust recipes. You can find a lot of different recipes out there for crust. And I have one that I've used for a long time, and it's pretty much just a butter crust, which is really yummy. But the recipe I got had you put dried onion in it, like little pieces of dried onion, and you usually get those at the store in a container, dried onions. I've been making my own in my dehydrator, which is really nice too. But if you don't, I've certainly used the ones you get at the store a lot too. And something about the dried onion in the pastry crust is just ridiculous. It's so good.
It's amazing how you can
a
add
pot
some
pie
extra
is
flavor.
Just cozy comfort food. This is basically just like a dish of stew with a crust on top. And when it bakes, the crust gets that kind of, oh, it just, it, like the gravy kind of soaks into the crust, and it's just, oh man, I'm making pot pie this week.
There is something really amazing about comfort food, right?
It is.
And
I know.
Pot pie and.
I know. Absolutely.
So mashed potatoes. I can't. Oh, gotta go there.
Yeah, mashed potatoes is so good. Okay. Whoa. So I'm just looking at the time and realizing we need to pause for an identification and tell you that you are listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5, streaming live at coastradio.org. And you can also listen using the TuneIn app on your mobile device.
And if you are just joining us, you're listening to Food Talk, and today we're talking about seasonal cooking. We also wanted to mention that if you've got questions about food, like how to cook this, or tell me more about making stock, or whatever that is, or suggestions for what you might like to see on future shows, please let us know that. We'd love to hear from you, and you can send emails to info@northcoastfoodweb.org. And for this one, if in the subject line, you would put Food Talk, so we know it's related to that, and it'll funnel to Teresa and I, and we'll be happy to take a look at your suggestions and questions.
Yeah, we were thinking about, like, going forwards, like having at least one show every once in a while, just simply be answering questions and talking about recipes and doing things like this, because it's just, we find that there's so much to talk about, and there's so many things to
And
to
we get questions dig. On the street.
I know, and so we want to kind of dig down into those things. And address them further. And one thing that we also wanted to talk about, I'm recognizing that it's the beginning of November, and I hate to even say this out loud, but the dreaded holiday season is coming up. And I just want us all to take a deep breath. We're going to get through this. It's all going to be okay. Just like keep breathing. But this is a great time to be thinking about the inevitable round of gift giving that happens at the holiday time, because there are some really great food gifts you can start on now. And if you start them now, you are so way ahead of the curve, and it is going to hopefully reduce your stress level come mid-December, when you might be panicking and then suddenly thinking you have to do like a frenzy of baking, and it can get really overwhelming. So this is all about trying to reduce stress for the holidays, which I'm very pro stress reduction for this time of year. So some ideas for things you could start now that could just be kind of simmering, cooking, sitting in a jar that you just shake every once in a while, and then come, you know, mid-December, you strain it out, or you've already, you know, canned it, you've got jars of stuff that you're making now, you've got things that you've dried. So
a couple of really easy food ones. Preserved lemons is one of my absolute favorites. And I think a lot of people are not doing those at home yet. And if you haven't, give it a try. They're super easy and they're so good. They can be used in so many ways. I think we're all probably most familiar with them from Moroccan cooking, a tagine, which is basically the vessel that the dish is cooked in. But we tend to refer to the food as a tagine. Preserved lemons is a great one. And vanilla extract. Of course, I think about extract. Mm-hmm. Making your own is really wonderful, and you can then have control over what's in it. And you might want to read the labels of some of that in the grocery stores sometime. And
yeah,
think about making your own extract. Bitters is another one. That's really popular. People are making their own bitters. That's a fun one.
And bitters are just like a flavoring that goes into cocktails. But you can also just I made cranberry bitters last year.
Nice.
And they were great. It was kind of complicated a little bit. I mean, there were steps. I mean, you put a whole bunch of stuff in a jar, and then you let it sit for a while. You shake it up, and then you add some more stuff, and you let it sit for a while. And you shake it up, and then you strain it. And so there's all different kinds of flavors of bitters you can make, and they're really nice. I just would just, you know, dash some into a glass of bubbly water as a flavoring, and that was really good too.
Yeah.
There's also infused vodkas or things like that you can make. I've done
infused
cranberry
vinegars.
Absolutely. I've done, you know, kind of fruit soaked in vodka or fruit soaked in brandy. And again, if you start that now and let it start soaking, and really, it's like truly, it's the 5 minutes that you take putting the fruit in a jar and pouring a bottle of some kind of booze over it and letting it sit, and sometimes adding sugar and you shake it up every once in a while, and then eventually you're going to strain it out and put it in bottles. And there's also, you can look around like bottles and jars and things like that. You can often find really cool ones in thrift stores. Mm-hmm. And as long as you just give it a good, like, sterilizing and hot water, they're great to use. It can be pretty low cost,
especially overhead. Especially if you're not canning with those, if you're using them more as a decorative for one of your infusions or
and then
extracts.
It's really just like a packaging and the labels. Yeah, and those are, I love getting things like that when people give stuff to me, because oftentimes they're kind of treat foods that you wouldn't necessarily take the time to make for yourself, but someone else has taken the time to make it for you. You know, and if you are a canner or a preserver, there's some great fruits that are out right now. Apples and pears are still pretty much in abundance. And honestly,
about pear butter.
I just made a pear butter yesterday that was amazing. Yum. And this was a crock pot pear butter. And I got it. I just got a new book. I'm a kind of a book junkie, called Food in Jars, Preserving in Small Batches Year Round by Marissa McClellan. I got it down at Lucy's Books in Astoria. I would totally, you know, any of our Godfathers, Beach Books in Seaside, Canna Beach Books, Jupiter's Books. We have a lot of great local bookstores that can order some awesome books for you. And this was so easy. It was basically you chopped up your pears and you put it in a crock pot and you let them cook for a really long time. And then after about 4 hours, you mashed them down and you added some sugar and some ginger and a couple of other things. I can't remember what they were. And you let it cook some more. You kept stirring it.
With pumpkin or
you could
apples.
Do it with a lot of different things. And it was
so
and butters are really nice. You basically let it cook down until it gets thick and spreadable. And then you do want to water bath process it if you want to store it, have it be shelf stable to store. But if you're comfortable with doing that, this is a really easy thing to do.
Super
and
good.
I will say there are still a lot of fruit trees out there that are loaded with fruit. There may be one in your neighborhood. People have a lot of Asian pears and things. And Asian pears are really awesome too to do stuff like this with. So, I mean, if you're looking for low cost holiday gifts, go scrounging for fruit in your neighborhood and
so
do some of that.
So talking about food in jars, and Teresa's talking about fruit, and my mind goes to the food in jars that I'm going to be making soon, and it's cheddar cheese, bacon, shallots.
God, I love you. I hope I'm on your holiday gift list.
It's got some cream in it, but it's like they call it potted cheese or sometimes they're called pub cheese or tavern cheese.
Is it like a spreadable cheese?
It's kind of a spreadable cheese. You know, you think about mom's cheese ball that she used to make for cocktail parties back in the day.
With the nuts on the outside?
Yeah. Those have come back in style, by the way. They're really trendy again to do cheese balls. And there's some great recipes out there.
Oh, man.
But some bacon and some shallots sautéed.
Yeah.
And then this, you have got to use a really wonderful quality sharp cheddar cheese.
Yeah.
And it had a little bit of cream in there, and you whiz that all up in your food processor and put it in a crock, and you've got this amazing, amazing, amazing spreadable cheese. And I love my cheese.
Yeah, you do. I want to say that for things like that, you know, we do a lot of baking at the holidays too, and cookies. I will never turn down cookies if people want to give them to me, and candies and sweets, love that stuff. But one thing I've been doing in recent years is making crackers.
Oh, nice.
And having sometimes having a savory thing in a jar. Like I've made onion marmalades and things like that, some really
beautiful,
wonderful chutneys and relishes. And savory crackers, maybe with a little bit of potted cheese or with a nice wedge of good cheese or some smoked salmon can be great.
With a little dollop of pear butter.
It can be really, I mean, those are some really fun things to do. And so I also, because I'm a cookbook junkie, I got another book that I want to recommend. It's called Crackers and Dips, More Than 50 Handmade Snacks. It's by Ivy Manning. And you can also find some awesome you can find some great cracker recipes online too. And there's one that I love, and I have to just try and say this name because people are going to like shout at me because it's Norwegian. It's Norwegian. Oh God, I'm embarrassed. Havrekjeks.
Wow.
It's Havrekjeks. How the heck do you say that, Norwegian people? I don't know. Sweet salty oatmeal rounds. And it's like using rolled oats, all-purpose flour, baking powder, salted butter, a little bit of Greek yogurt, and a little sea salt for a little sea salt for garnish. And they're these kinds of crackers are pretty easy to do. You know, if you've made cookies, you can make crackers. It's just kind of like cookies without
the
sugar.
They are so easy. They really are
and
easy.
It's a really wonderful,
so good.
It's a wonderful gift if you just have some crackers and like a little savory something in a basket. And again, baskets are thick on the ground at thrift stores, you know, yeah. All those things. People, I think they just rotate through all of us. You know, we all get given as gifts and then we give them to the thrift store and then someone else goes and gets it and we get it back again.
We're
I'm waiting for some of my...
well.
I know. So that can be a really nice gift. And I think, you know, start thinking about those things now. Start putting some stuff together.
What we haven't talked about?
What haven't we talked about?
Marshmallows.
Marshmallows are awesome to make.
Truth and I both make marshmallows.
Oh,
at
yeah.
the holiday time.
They are really good. And that's
if
a cool thing.
If you've not ever tasted a homemade marshmallow, oh my gosh.
It is.
They're
it will.
Amazing.
Yeah, you can't go back again. And that's another great gift. If you give someone like a little hot cocoa mix and some marshmallows
yep.
and a nice mug, that's super comforting. The other one I will say that I've been thinking about this too, like homemade granola can be a really nice
yes.
gift. And one other thing that I've been doing with all of this abundant fruit that's out on our trees right now is drying it. I have a dehydrator. It's great if you have a dehydrator. You can often borrow one from someone for a few days. Or you can dry fruit in your oven on really low mm-hmm. with like the door cracked as well. Just look
yeah.
that up on how to do it.
That's great.
It's a great
granola.
One. And just sometimes like a little gift of like even like I love using it on oatmeal
mm-hmm.
and giving people like a little bag of steel cut oats and some dried fruit and
nice.
Maybe a little thing of honey. And I just want to do a shout out to steel cut oats because people like really
yum.
get freaked about them because if you look at the recipes, they take about half an hour to cook in the morning. But I learned a really cool thing. The night before,
mm-hmm.
you take your steel cut oats, you take a cup of steel cut oats to 4 cups of water and you put it in a pot. And some recipes say you bring it to a boil and then you turn off the heat and you let it sit overnight. And then in the morning, it takes about 3 minutes to cook up. And it is the most amazing oatmeal you've ever had. And then
yeah,
you put some of
really
your dried fruit and nuts on it. I will also say that I have forgotten to do the boil, bring it to a boil the night before. And I've just let it sit overnight soaking. And it still took about 3 minutes to cook. So
yeah, soaking is amazing mm-hmm. for grains. And if you think about, not that we want to get talking about diets, but it makes me think about Weston Price and sort of that traditional food process, they're really big into soaking grains. And
mm-hmm.
that's a really wonderful way to make them even more digestible if people have issues with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that to me would be a really great gift. So there's a lot of ideas out there. We would love to hear, like, what are you making for the holidays?
I'm stuck on granola. I found this amazing, amazing granola recipe that hits that sweet spot of salty, sweet fat that's just amazing. this granola has olive oil and it has maple syrup and it has a bit of salt in it with the oats and the seeds and the nuts and the fruit that you add to it. It is the most amazing thing, and I restrict actually how often I can make that at home because Tom and I will devour embarrassing quantities of it when we make it because it is so incredibly
okay. So
delicious.
I want this recipe, and I will just say so. I know we haven't shared a whole lot of like detailed recipes here. So if you're really desperate to know a recipe about anything that we've talked about or anything, like send us an email, and we will try
we'll
and get,
share.
We will share absolutely because it's all about sharing food, and we're excited about it too. So I'm just looking at the clock and realizing, holy cow.
So as a reminder, if you do have questions about
mm-hmm.
food, suggestions of what you might like to hear more of on the show,
mm-hmm.
please let us know that. info@northcoastfoodweb.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would put Food Talk in the subject line, that helps sort out the emails that come into that so
yeah.
we can get your questions funneled to the appropriate people.
Absolutely. And I just want to thank the lovely Kate Brister for sitting in for Marianne Myers today as our engineer. And I want to ask Kate, I'm going to bring you into this conversation because I want to do a shout out, save the date. It's a long way ahead, but I'm a big advocate in planning ahead. In April, is it April 11th?
It is Saturday, April 11th, Spring into Gardening Seminar. And do the Master Gardeners of Clatsop County are in cahoots in conjunction with North Coast Food Web for food glorious foods.
So we
eat.
We are so the whole Spring Garden seminar that the Clatsop County Master Gardeners put on this coming year in April is going to be all about food. It's going to be about growing food, cooking food, eating food. We really want to focus on food, and so we're excited about it. Saturday, April 11th. Save that date.
Absolutely. And besides all kinds of demonstrations and lectures and talks about food, of course, we have over 20 vendors of local businesses also doing food and of our North Coast famous plant sale. So we do want you to be sure and save that date.
Absolutely. So thank you so much, Kate, for letting people know about that. And we'll keep reminding you about that throughout the year. And thanks to Luke and Katie for our theme song.
Thanks for joining us today. Fresh conversations about local food on the North Coast.